Please listen carefully.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Christy Jansen.
And I'm Summers McKay.
And we're part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded solutions news every day in order to change the tenor of news media and the direction of your day to one focused on solutions.
7 days a week, we publish positive news stories written by award-winning journalists and delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And now, actually, Christy, I think this is like our 55th episode, but we are sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, home office-worthy, inspire solutions, and let's get to real deep conversations about what the world is doing worthy podcast. Today is Tuesday, June 9th, 2020. We'll first start with something on a lighter note. I changed the show notes to say instead of hello world, hello cats. And if you stay to the end of this episode, you might get an outtake from Amelia.
It's my homage to the Tiger King.
Well, today, guys, we are doing something different on the Optimist Daily Update. We, as always, will be talking about two stories from the Optimist Daily that are very relevant, but we are focusing our conversation on a controversial, challenging, and somewhat inflammatory, but incredibly important solution of changing the structure of the economics around police departments worldwide, and specifically here in the United States, to ensure more justice and safety for communities. So we are talking about defund the police. Christy, how does that phrase land for you?
I know why it's inflammatory. And the idea of getting rid of police is something that you think defund the police. Oh my God, what are we going to do with public safety, keeping us safe? There's bad guys out there. And that whole model in our minds about the good guys and the bad guys and the cops. And I'm a middle class white woman who grew up in relatively safe, secure neighborhoods my entire life. To me, the police are not the menace that they are for many of our Black communities and other communities in our country. So the term defund the police, it sounds like a frightening thing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean defunding police departments. But really what it means is reallocating some of the budget so that it also supports other community-based initiatives and things that really take public safety, not just as a police force, a militaristic kind of style, which is the direction our police departments have gone over the last few decades, and instead brings up the community in more imbalance. So it's funding things like community centers, community-based public safety efforts, which we'll talk a little bit about when I play the clip from my conversation with Akilah Sherrill.
Yeah, my reaction to defund the police is a split reaction. The Optimist Daily version of Summers is immediately like, all right, this is the solution. What are we going to do? We're going to defund the police. We're going to refund other things. It's going to change the world. And then this would fall into the category of my white fragility, my white privileges, but aren't the police there to protect us? And what does defunding it mean? And is this going to become an anarchist state? Are we heading away from Orwellian and to Mad Max? What is this terrifying notion of losing this institution that I, as you mentioned, as a white middle to upper class woman, have benefited from. As many of you know, I am married to someone who is on the opposite side of politics as I am. We agree on a lot of social issues, but not on fiscal issues. And my husband is very affronted by the idea of defunding the police. The book that I am reading, White Fragility, that's helping me be kinder in understanding the fear that the idea of defunding the police can generate for white communities. And so I think it's really important that we have this conversation to understand the language, because the language itself is part of what is generating fear. And I think there is a way to all come together if we really understand what defunding the police actually means. You had a conversation with a friend and colleague of yours, Akilah Sherrill. Tell us a little bit about that and go ahead and maybe introduce the clip we're going to play from his conversation.
Sure. So Akilah Sherrill's is a peace activist. He's a social justice warrior, and he's been at this for more than 30 years. He and his brother and his friends from Watts, which is where he grew up in Watts, California, in South Central Los Angeles, they were really instrumental in brokering the peace between the Bloods and the Crips in 1992. And this was in the wake of the Rodney King events that happened. And since then, and even before that, he's been active in trying to change the narrative and also change the experience for people in largely Black communities where he's from. These are places that have been defunded systematically for 50 years. And when you think about the idea of protect and serve, which is the police motto for most cities, who are they protecting and who are they serving? And for people in Watts, that wasn't who they were protecting and that wasn't who they were serving. I mean, that's part of the conversation. But the conversation I had with Akila, who now is working on community-based public safety initiatives in Newark, New Jersey, after he was very, very instrumental in many of those kinds of programs here in California and other places in the country, he has actually advised the police department and the mayor in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which we'll hear a little bit in this clip. And I'd like to go ahead and play this short clip. We'll turn this into a longer form interview for Solutions News at some point, and also we'll write about it this weekend in The View that I'm working on. But let me play this. Sorry, we have 2 minutes before you have to get off, but I would love to get just what you think might happen in the current moment with what happened in Minneapolis.
Minneapolis is actually one of the cities that I had been working in, you know, for 3 years before the situation happened, you know, trying our best to advise, you know, leadership in the city. And, you know, they have great leadership, man. It's like Chief Randall is an ally, you know, Deputy Chief Knight, my man Glenn Burke, who runs the Navigators program in the city that's connected through MPD. They, you know, the thing is that the system is just so convoluted, right? And so then what happens is that, you know, our brother George Floyd is murdered, you know what I'm saying, by cops who are insensitive and who are ill-trained, right? And so we're at an inflection point in terms of policing in this country. We're never going to go back to the way things were. And so my belief is that, like, what's the solution? The thing that people are protesting every day out in the street for is that the solution is community-based public safety. You know, some of these cops, they don't even live in the city. They live in other states, and all of this stuff is about to come out. And they're parachuting in, working 3 12-hour shifts. They come in totally desensitized and discombobulated, you know, and then they go out to their other 2 3 jobs that they're working in order to make ends meet, right? And so we have to invest in community-based public safety initiatives so that instead of, like, the liquor store owners having to call the police when something goes awry, they can reach out and call one of their neighbors who, right, who are trained in public safety policy, you know, in conflict resolution and mediation and restorative justice and trauma-informed practices, to be able to peacefully mediate these conflicts to a successful outcome. Because our cops are not always the best messengers and the most credible messengers in terms of responding to these types of things. Mm-hmm.
Especially when they're not, the cops aren't the neighbors, right? You need to have a neighbor kind of mentality, a community mentality.
That's right. And, you know, so our officers, man, like, my heart goes out to those folks, mm-hmm, right? And at the same time, I'm like, you know, we don't need to be spending, you know, $300 million a year on a police department and then closing down youth clubs and programs and social services and libraries. It's absolutely insane, you know, that we've created this police culture, you know, that has nothing to do with safety. It's about policing. And policing and safety are two totally different things.
Well, that was Akila Shirills, and we'll put a link to some more information about him in the show notes. But he's a brilliant guy, peace warrior, peace activist, and a social entrepreneur who's got some really interesting things to say.
What really struck me about that clip, Christy, and certainly we've had more in-depth conversations, but was the notion of community safety and wellness being part of the community, being of the neighbors, being in the relationships that exist neighbor to neighbor. The idea that a police force would be an external force that is not embedded in the community is something that we just don't even think about. But in order to improve community safety and wellness, the solutions need to come from within the community. So one of the things about defunding the police that, you know, I've read a ton of articles about how it's worked in other places, and a big investment that comes from defunding the police and funding community is investing in mental health, wellness, and community building and centers within areas that need to have that focus. I know you've done some research on that. Tell me a little bit about what you know as far as what works as a solution to improving community experience and safety.
Well, one of the things, and this came out in my conversation with Akilah as well, in addition to the trauma that is systemic in these neighborhoods, there's lots of trauma also within the police departments. And I think some of the investment that we're talking about in terms of refunding these communities, it's not just about defunding police, it's really reallocating some of those resources away from kind of a more militaristic style where you have these police parachuting in, almost acting as if they are occupying forces. That's what we've seen in the news in the last few weeks, where the police are not embedded in the community in a neighborly kind of way in some of these situations, but rather coming in from the outside, and they don't have a sensitivity to the people that they're supposed to be protecting with the police. But if you move away from that and you think about supporting the community, and yes, it's the physical infrastructure investing there, but it's also the social infrastructure and the relationship-based healing that must happen in these communities, in these towns, and within the police department. And I know that in the Los Angeles article, a big part of the money that Mayor Garcetti is talking about reallocating is going to be directed towards youth jobs, towards health initiatives, towards peace centers, towards mental health trauma centers, which is part of the issue here. I think police officers, they're more likely to die from suicide than they are by being killed in the line of duty. And that is a testament to how stressful their jobs are. And part of that is that they don't have the mental health support services that they need either. And the entire culture in the police is one of be strong and be silent and that machismo, that you're not supposed to be weak or vulnerable to having a reaction to the things you're seeing all the time and the stress of those jobs.
Yeah.
And then you think about the people who are victims of violence are also the perpetrators of violence in these cities where they've been just underfunded or defunded for decades are often acting out of their own personal traumas, whether it's sexual abuse or child abuse or just violence in the street. And they don't have the mechanisms, the coping skills to even know how to react on an emotional level when somebody has attacked them. And they're in survival mode all the time. And when you have people in survival mode, that's where the people who are living in these neighborhoods are acting out of. And the police are also acting out of survival. It's all reactionary, and you don't have the ability to take a step back, to take a pause and de-escalate. And that's what these community-based public wellness types of programs are helping to initiate. And that's why I love Akilah's work.
We've talked about the Optimist Daily choosing to be responsive, not reactive. And I think that that's a very good description of what defunding the police or changing investment in community safety is about. It's about being responsive and not reactive. And Chrissy, you just made a great visual description of everybody trying to just survive. And if an entire community, both the police and the community members, are all just trying to survive, nobody is making strategic or good decisions. Everyone is just reactive. Some of the cities that have already initiated defunding the police and reallocating funds elsewhere actually include Austin, Texas, where 9/11 calls are answered by operators who immediately inquire whether someone needs police, fire, or mental health services. So they're just putting mental health right up in there. That is prioritized at the same level as police and fire. On a tactical level, where is this money coming from? So the money would be taken from overtime or expensive equipment and then shifted into those mental health, housing, and education programs. There was a New York Times article that I read that quoted that activists believe that sufficient money could bring down systemic societal change and cut down on crime and violence. And if defunding the police department, which really would be better served to be described as reallocating or redistributing.
But also part of the problem is that we've put so much of the burden of, quotes, public safety on our police forces by moving libraries out of these communities, by moving away from having other more community-based resources youth centers, teachers, and when you have decades and decades of adults who have been incarcerated, it is a messed up situation. And so you got so much pressure on the police, just kind of like how we put more and more burden on our teachers to raise our children for us, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now that our schools have been closed, a lot of parents are going, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? I don't know how to control my own child, because you expect them to behave well in their classrooms. And then the teachers have gotten some of the burden of parenting. Yeah. In a similar way, our police officers have been burdened with taking care of us in a way that is not really their job. It shouldn't be their job. It should be community-based responses.
Well, this conversation is obviously just beginning, but hopefully if you've had a chance to listen to this and it has opened your eyes a bit to the value of the solution of defunding the police, but also recognizing that defunding the police is not about taking something away, but instead giving in a better way. And it is also about giving to the police departments and the police organizations the support that they need by having them not be responsible for an entire community, but instead responsible for the safety and protection against crime.
And also, I mean, in the past, and part of it is just that as we've shifted towards policing as our main vehicle for keeping the peace, so to speak, police aren't necessarily trained. They have, in many, many states, they require less training to become a police officer than it does to become a cosmetologist. There's more licensing to cut someone's hair than there is to carry a sidearm and go into people's homes as a police officer.
Yeah. Well, this is a great point and a great conversation. And Christy, thank you for bringing in Akilah Sherrill's voice today for the Optimist Daily Update. As always, there are other fantastic stories available on the Optimist Daily that touch base on solutions in lifestyle and environment. There's an app allowing urban tree lovers to connect with their natural surroundings.
I just want to point out that New Jersey, which is where Akilah is working, and they're doing a lot of interesting programs there in Newark and other places. But our lead story today is about how New Jersey is now mandating climate change education in schools. I think that's another solution that I wanted to celebrate.
Absolutely. It is a holistic community growth opportunity. You can read about the largest electric planes. You can find a list of videos that you can watch on YouTube that actually help the Black Lives Matter movement.
There's a 10-year-old girl who sent thousands of art kits to kids in foster care. She says, art is my superpower. I love that story. People go read it about Chelsea Charity.
That and a lot more is available on the Optimist Daily. Let us know your feedback and your thoughts on the conversation we've had today and more in-depth conversations we can have about solutions that will change this world for good. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Optimist Daily Update. We promise to continue to share these positive solution-based stories with ideas on how you can participate, understand, and educate in this changing world, ensuring it is changed for the good. We will cover the current events with accuracy, legitimate sources, and offer you the information needed most to chart new paths for all of us.
And please consider becoming an emissary on theoptimistdaily.com. And for just $5 a month, you can support reader-funded independent journalism and be a part of the solution-changing consciousness and addressing our world's biggest challenges with a problem-solving solutions mindset. Thanks so much, Summers.
Thank you, Christy. Thanks for a great conversation. And thank you, Akilah, for all the work that you're doing and everybody out there doing work to make the world a better place.
Hello, cats and kittens. Welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Christy Jansen.
Okay, we'll do that again.